This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I am so thrilled to have the beautiful and the wonderful Jeannie Becker back on the program. And Jeannie's here today to talk about her latest venture, her absolutely gorgeous book, Heart on My Sleeve, Stories from a Life Well Worn, with a foreword by Linda Evangelista. And in the green room, we were just talking about how I not only read the book, but I listened to it on Audible at the same time. And I encourage you all to do this because it's in Jeannie's voice. And then, you know, from her former acting days, she also plays the roles of all the men and the women and everyone. And it's quite wonderful. And even the foreword is in Linda Evangelista's voice. So I encourage you all to check that out. I actually think it's the best book that Jeannie's ever written. I'm crazy about it. I just loved it. It's so readable. It's so juicy and heartwarming, and or as Jeannie would say, heart swelling. And really, congratulations on all of this. And before we meet her, talk to her, she has been on the show many times before, and we're delighted to have her back. Let me just tell you a little bit more about the wonderful Jeannie Becker. So as you know, she's a household name. She, of course, was the host of the hit show Fashion Television, which aired in 130 countries for over 27 years. That's three decades. And really, it was known as the most successful show in Canadian history. Prior to that, of course, she hosted the groundbreaking show, The New Music, was a founding member of Much Music. That's pretty cool. And she's also a seasoned writer, a newspaper and magazine columnist. She was editor-in-chief of FQ and Sir magazines from 2003 to 2009. Of course, she's a keynote speaker. You all know her from the last 10 years of the Shopping Channel, TSC. She's fabulous on that. And she hosts her eponymous show, Style Matters. Check it out if you haven't. Of course, she's received numerous honorary doctorates. She was named to the Order of Canada in 2013. She received a star on Canada's Walk of Fame in 2016, and so much more. And really, her name is synonymous with style and grace and fashion. She spent an entire career interviewing celebrities and uncovering their most private selves. And now in this book, Heart on My Sleeve, Jeannie reveals who she is in an all new way. So it's not just a memoir. There's something very clever in this book. Jeannie walks us through her recollections, I'm excited, of specific pieces of clothing and jewelry, precious items that have made an indelible impact on her. And she invites readers to think more deeply about how what we wear, whether it's a thrift store find or high-end couture, acts as a touchstone to our most treasured recollections, reminding us of who we once were, or of loved ones we hold dear. And of course, she talks about all these wonderful people in the book and her relationships with Paul McCartney, Madonna, Beyonce, Karl Lagerfeld, Kate Moss, Oscar de la Renta, Keith Richards, and more. But more importantly, she introduces us to the family members and loved ones who form her closest entourage, including her wise Yiddish mother and her industrious father, both of whom were Holocaust survivors. And then that childhood neighbor, if this ever becomes a film, I can see this neighbor, Mrs. Jaskolka, a style maven ahead of her time. And of course, Jeannie talks about her two trailblazing daughters, and we'll be hearing one of them sing on the show again, and that's Joey O'Neill, who's fabulous, and her many warm and exuberant friends who've seen her through the best and the worst of times. Jeannie proves that a life lived with style and substance is always in fashion. Bold, colorful, and authentic, this is Jeannie Becker at her very best and brightest. Jeannie, welcome back to Finding Your Bliss. We're so delighted to have you here again.
Oh, absolutely delighted to be here, Judy. I always love talking with you.
You're so amazing. You are just really, you are beauty and brains and talent and grace and grit and everything that's good. And you're an inspiration to everyone, like an entire generation and the younger generation, my daughter and your daughters, and pretty cool stuff.
Very humbling. Thank you so much. I just feel like, you know, I've been around for a long time and I've worked really hard, and to see, you know, this kind of recognition or appreciation at this particular point in my life, nothing beats it. I'm just really humbled and very, very touched.
It's beyond well-deserved. So I remember, and this is what I find so fascinating about you, Jeannie, is in our last interview, I think you've been on the show three times now, you mentioned you were going to be writing another book, which would walk readers through a wardrobe of memory, one article of clothing at a time. And I feel like that was a year and a half ago. And you are such a make it happen kind of person that that's exactly what you did. And I read that when you look through your mother's jewelry box, through your own jewelry box, each piece always filled you with nostalgia and evocative memories. And then Simon & Schuster reached out to you. And guys, I have to say, that's also a very cool thing in this industry. That doesn't happen. We write books and we go out there to the publishers, but Simon & Schuster, very major publishing company, reached out to you to write your sixth book. And so I guess I'm wondering, what inspired you to connect clothing and accessories with your special memories of celebrities, designers, and loved ones, and to craft the book in this unique way?
Well, I was searching for a unique way to tell my story. And I was at a brainstorming session with the people from Simon & Schuster, the former president of Simon & Schuster, Kevin Hansen, and Nita Pronovost, who is Nita Prose. You may know her name.
Yes.
That huge best-selling books, The Maid and The Mystery Guest, and she's got another one coming out now. So Nita was, she used to be the editorial director of Simon & Schuster until quite recently, actually. And she was my editor. So, wow, I was working with some great brains to begin with. And we were at a lunch thinking, how are we going to tell, you know, the story in a different way? Some of these stories have been told before because I've written two other memoirs, but it seemed like it was time to do one with a really unique spin. And of course, so much had happened in the past decade that I hadn't written about, including meeting the love of my life and including going through a cancer journey. But so I started thinking about sentimentality and how when I was a little girl, I would pore over my mother's trinkets in her jewelry box or my big sister's jewelry box and just wondering where these things came from and where they must have gone and the incredible adventures perhaps that they would have inspired. And I thought, well, what about if I told my story through that lens where I see my life as this big jewelry box and I will write about specific treasured pieces that I've had in my jewelry box since I was a little girl and we'll spin those into stories. They said, okay, that sounds great. So I went away and started writing about some of these treasured trinkets and some of the stories associated with them. But I quickly realized that it was too limiting. I had to think outside the jewelry box. I had to go into my wardrobe and my closet at large. And because, listen, so many people obviously relate me to that world of fashion. I can't understand why. I brought it into their living rooms for almost three decades. So I thought, well, this is really going to be liberating. If I can start writing about all these incredible stories through the lens of wardrobe, so every chapter or every story either starts with a garment, a piece of jewelry, some kind of accessory perhaps, and then spin into the storytelling that way. And yeah, it just seemed to be a great vehicle. It was also great, Judy, because it helped me edit my stories. Because if I didn't have a garment or a piece of jewelry or accessory to associate with the story,
yes.
I wasn't going to tell that story. I'll save it for another book.
Right. But it also, I think, anchored the stories in such a profound way because it's almost like each story had this piece of clothing that, you know, made it all make sense. Like the satchel that your mother brought over from Europe. Like that is personified, like an inanimate object come to life for me, filled to the brim with all of those photographs and how those were relatives and cousins and aunts and uncles that you didn't get to meet personally. So there's something so poignant about you sitting there as a little girl and looking carefully and lovingly at each picture and trying to imagine those people. And those pictures, those photographs were housed in that satchel. Can you tell us about that satchel that lasted for many years?
And then it just sort of disappeared. I think my mother got into photo albums, became a big thing in the 60s. So she threw the satchel away, I guess, and all these incredible photos that had been salvaged from the war years and some that had been taken shortly after the war while my parents were living in an Austrian DP camp. These pictures were just so precious to us. And I would sit in her closet because that's where she kept this bag at the back of her closet. And I would sit there as a little girl looking at these photos almost like it was a clandestine thing. I mean, I don't know if my mother wanted me to rifle through the photos too much because they were so precious. She didn't want me to destroy them, of course. But I would look at them and really start believing that maybe I wasn't so different than other kids. Yes. Maybe once upon a time, you know, I did have a grandmother. I did have a grandfather. I did have cousins and uncles and aunts. And just really seeing how beautiful my parents looked, you know, right after the war, they just looked like a couple of movie stars. You know,
they really do.
They just had a great sense of style, and you can see, you know, pictures of them in the book. And so it gave me such a foundation in a way that, and certainly for me, that was where I had to start the book, even though I say the stories are not told in chronological order. But for me, I had to start with that satchel, that precious satchel. It was the first accessory that I really began. Oh, this is like a bag. It's like a purse. It's like a messenger bag. It's like, and I used to pose in front of the mirror with it and feel really important. There was just such gravitas to that particular accessory for me.
It's just beautiful. I love that you started there. It's just incredible. And I think this book brings up so many, conjures up so many memories for anyone reading it, because you start to think about your favorite pair of faded jeans or that favorite gown or that thing you never throw out, which we're going to get to in a minute, those wonderful pieces that you kept forever that are sentimental for you. And I also love that one of your editors asked you to dig deep and you started to discover little jewels and treasures that you hadn't even thought possible. Was that what happened when you remembered the wonderful Ronnie Hawkins story, which relates to you getting up on stage wearing a yellow bikini top with pom-poms on it and how he invited you to dance on stage at 17? And there you were in the newspaper the next day, your first brush with fame. I mean, tell us about that.
Well, honestly, Judy, that, in a funny kind of way, that story really helped define my life and certainly my career aspirations, my professional life. I mean, I was a professional actress from the age of 16, you know, so yes. I always liked attention. You know, I always wanted to be out there. I was never shy. But when this fabulous pop festival came to town to play Varsity Stadium in the summer of 1969, and I was going to go there with my girlfriend, Esther Goldfluss, I was determined to make something happen. I don't know. I just thought this was just, it was such an exciting thing for me. So we were in the crowd. There were about 60,000 fans there. And I had a seat. It wasn't really a seat. We were on a blanket, like on the ground, like, but right near the stage. And when Ronnie Hawkins got on stage and started singing, you know, "Hey, Bo Diddley," and it was just like a moment. And I jumped up and I just started dancing and shaking it. And I was wearing this little yellow bikini with pom-poms on it and a big yellow shirt over it.
But as so I cute.
Started, you know, I was really just dancing and booging my brains out. And Ronnie spotted me and points to me and he goes, "Hey, come on up," you know?
Oh, like, my God.
And I'm looking like, "Who, me? Are you talking to me?" And then my girlfriend Esther's going, "Yes, go. Go for it. Go for it." She's like pushing me. And before I knew it, there were these cops that were helping me get up on the stage. And I, you know, I whipped off my yellow shirt so I could like beat, because I just felt, okay, look at me, Toronto. Here I am. This is my big moment to be discovered or something.
Wow.
And I just started dancing and it was just a fabulous, fabulous time. And then, of course, as you said, my picture got in the paper the next day. Ronnie Hawkins' manager ended up contacting me the next day. My mother was not. The ladies from her Hadassah chapter were calling her like, "Hey, can you get that?" Anyway, so I ended up going downtown to meet Ronnie Hawkins' manager at the Hawk's Nest, which was where Ronnie's office was on top of Le Coq d'Or, a great, great old club on Yonge Street. And they started propositioning me, you know, saying, "Well, would you like to come to this other festival that's happening at the end of the summer in upstate New York?" That was Woodstock. Because we want to get Ronnie on the bill, but we want to, you know, fly you in on a helicopter and we want you to drop you out of the helicopter. And when Ronnie's on stage, and you'll start dancing. And if you do it, you know, we're going to take you to meet Elvis Presley. And it was like, "Really? Oh yeah, Ronnie's a good old friend of Elvis Presley." Okay, well, not so much, but whatever. And I'm getting so excited. He goes, "The only thing is
the catch.
We want you to take off your bikini top."
Oh, like,
I don't think my mother is going to like that at all. And, you know, I guess the good, decent little girl in me thought,
I can't do that.
And I said, well, I'll go home and think about it anyway.
That's hilarious.
You'll have to read the rest of the story. And, you know, that was not my last encounter with Ronnie Hawkins. Obviously, we had many, many, many encounters in the following years once I started hosting the new music. I even went to Memphis with Ronnie. So it was incredible. But it was just that moment of incredible elation, you know, being on stage in front of all those people and they're, you know, just dancing my brains out. And I just thought, wow, possible. And then to see my picture in the paper the next day, it was
fabulous.
Like,
okay, fabulous.
I've been discovered.
And you know what, Jeannie, you've always been fearless. Like, I even remember much later on in the book, you talk about how Pierre Trudeau is at this event, the former Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau, and you're with City Pulse News, and you just ask someone, hey, can I have a few minutes with him? Like, that takes a lot of guts. That takes a lot of chutzpah. A lot of people wouldn't do it. They'd be too shy, too scared. Is it right?
Yeah, but if they were too shy or too scared, then they shouldn't have taken that job. I mean,
you're right.
The job
you're right.
that I had, and especially, you know, and again, huge credit to the great visionary Moses Neimer for having an entertainment section on the news every night.
Yes.
Like in those days, this was like in the early 80s, they weren't doing entertainment stories on a newscast, but Moses started that with City Pulse, and I was one of the fearless, intrepid entertainment reporters. So I was just going for the gusto. Of course, you had to be fearless to have that job. And I'm telling you, Judy, when you got a camera man behind you rolling.
Yes.
And that's all I had. It wasn't, these weren't big fancy crews. It was like me, the camera guy.
Cameron.
But it gave me an incredible feeling of power. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I've got my camera guy there to protect me and he's going to capture it all unfolding. I did have the nerve to ask if I could interview Trudeau, who I just saw sitting at a table at this event. Like, and
yes.
I saw his, you know, his sort of heavy, whoever it was, an RCMP officer probably, go over to him and ask if he would be amenable to that. And Trudeau looked over and saw me in this slinky off-the-shoulder dress. I mean, this gorgeous gown that I start the story with.
Yes.
You know, he said, okay, yeah, come over. And I was there. And before I could even get my first question out, Trudeau is charming and fabulous, debonair and sexy as he was, you know, said, is it on the record that you have beautiful eyes?
Yes.
Anyway, it was just a very incredible moment for me. And I actually even have that bit of video still. So like, I've got proof of this, guys.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what a fantasy. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
What was I going to ask him? I was an entertainment reporter. I didn't know anything about politics, but it was just wonderful to have this light little exchange with him and, you know, a score there I was with it. I got a sound bite from the PM. Woohoo.
Yes. Well, you had always admirers. People who really admired you and would write your secret admirer, Gordon Lightfoot. Like, I love that story, how you first talk about how you did that interview and he never would do interviews. So you did that interview. You guys, you have to read the book because it's so cool. But where his answers, you play on the record the answer. Like, how clever and ingenious.
A pre-recorded interview that his record company had distributed because Gordon didn't like to do interviews. So he did one interview that they recorded and then they would send out the answers to all the radio stations. Just fill in the questions yourself. Anyway.
You described that was so cool. You have to read the book to find out how ingeniously and creatively you handled that. But then he actually did grant you a real interview. You went to his house.
And invited me to dinner.
And then after dinner, back to his house and serenaded you and that whole story with the guitar. As you sat on the floor of his grand rose dome, you have to read this, the song that he serenaded you with while you were pregnant.
Yeah, while I was pregnant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was self-conscious of being pregnant. You know, in those days, not that I wasn't thrilled about being pregnant. And I was pregnant with my first child, Becky, at the time. But in those days, I don't know, like women, it wasn't like we're showing off the baby bump, you know. I thought, oh, I've got to go to dinner with Gordon Lightfoot and I'm pregnant and you know, he probably doesn't know that I'm really pregnant yet. And I'm just going to like cover myself up with this big sparkly purple sweater. Again, that's how
a chapter. That's a chapter.
Yeah. So, you know, I was very self-conscious, but once he discovered that I was pregnant, of course, he was wonderfully supportive and very thrilled for me. And, you know, and it almost felt like that was a special moment that I was having with my unborn child. It was very magical, very magical.
If you could read my mind, love is what he sang to you. And it was good. And also Jeannie Petty walking in the bar and seeing you sitting at the bar.
Okay.
But there were admirers. Leonard Cohen also. There's a beautiful story about him. That was, I think he took you out for lunch. Am I right?
Yes, he did. Oh, Leonard.
Oh,
charming. Such a nice man. So charming.
Oh, so charming. So asked you about your love life.
I have to say, I've been so blessed in that so many of my heroes, these people that I really looked up to for so long and inspired me for so many years, they never disappointed me. I've never been disappointed by any of these here. They're even more incredible in person, which is, I don't know, that's quite a thing to say.
That's quite a thing.
I've been very lucky that way. And Leonard certainly was just a prince of a man. Yeah.
And they loved you. And he called you. Anyway, you got to read about it. It's fabulous. And the Paul McCartney story, I'm not going to tell you, but how you both showed up wearing the same thing. Something very similar, right?
Yeah, sort of the same thing. Along the same lines.
Along the same lines. And you know, and I thought also when I read this book that you came by this so honestly. Your mother was a fashionista. And while she didn't have the funds to buy the designer clothing, she bought a sewing machine. You had that wonderful German dressmaker, Mrs. Olson, her friend. And your mother would gather up her neighbor, Mrs. Deskolka, and off they'd go. And it was far away to get to this place. And just that story about, I think it was the purple and green gown. Or I know there's a purple and green coat later on, but that first gown.
Oh, no, the purple and green. Oh, that's a plaid coat.
That's later. Okay, that's at the end. But the gown.
You're thinking the green lace dress.
The green lace dress that you paired with the Manolo Banalica shoes to this big. Yeah. And you wore this.
Yeah, with a big fancy bar mitzvah at the Four Seasons that I'd been invited to. And I'd like, what am I going to wear? What am I going to. And finally, I was traveling through my closet and saw this incredible old gorgeous lace gown that my mother had made probably like, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s.
Wow.
Which she had given to me hoping that maybe one of my girls would wear it one day. And I thought, you know, like my girls are like this. Although maybe now they would, but this was going back a few years, you know, now that vintage is all the rage. And, you know, I thought, well, I wonder if I could fit into this dress. Although my mother was like 5 feet
tiny, tall. Yes.
And I thought, so the gown turned into a kind of just a little cocktail dress on me. It just kind of below the knee. And it kind of fit. And I thought, okay, you know, this is a really cool thing. I'm going to wear this dress of my mother's to the bar mitzvah. And I did. And I was schwitzing in it because it's like that old material. It didn't breathe. But everyone was complimenting me on it. And it's just such a gorgeous gown that my mother had concocted with Mrs. Yaskolka and her dressmaker. And sure enough, when they started playing Havana Gila, you know, I got up and I started dancing again. And all these incredible feelings about my mom and how many joyous times that she must have had in that incredible dress, you know, came rushing back. My mom was still alive at the time, so I had the joy of telling her that I actually had worn that dress.
And she loved that, I'll bet.
Over the
felling. That's so great. And not only did your mother influence your fashion sense, Jeannie, but I think your father did as well. And I love that wonderful story in the book about your father when the slipper fits and how even your father always said the first thing people will judge you on is how you're dressed. For better, for worse. And then here you go and you enter into the fashion industry following in his footsteps. How proud must he have been?
Yeah, they were just thrilled that I was, you know, living my dreams, you know, and my father was like my biggest publicity kind of press agent. He'd go into every, like a bank, he'd chat up the bank tellers and he'd be showing them my picture in his wallet. You know, she's my daughter.
She's everywhere.
It was really fun. Yeah, I didn't really think of the slipper business as the fashion business at the time.
Yes.
But because my dad was working in that little area in Spadina, the garment district in Toronto. That's where his factory was. He had all these connections to all these garment manufacturers, these dress companies, coat makers, and all kinds of wonderful, wonderful companies. And you know, we never believed in paying retail for anything, of course, in those days. Couldn't really afford to, but my dad was always taking us to the showrooms of some of these companies so we could get wholesale, you know, and I fit into a sample size. So I ended up getting quite a few great outfits that way and was exposed to the fashion industry. And my dad was working under the same kind of pressures that the fashion manufacturers were working under. He had to come up with a new collection every season. He had to undersell the competitors and he had to source the right materials. And so I guess I did learn a lot from my dad about the business of fashion in that way. But still, in those days, I never, ever, ever aspired to get into the fashion business. Wow. I mean, I love fashion, but no, I just wanted to be on stage.
But you really were. What's so interesting is you always have been as a result. Like, you know, it's been slightly different. You went to the National Theatre School.
No, I did. And I auditioned for the National Theatre School and did not get in. And they advised me to go to New York to the Herbert Berghoff Studio.
Yes, that's
which
right.
Which was a much better fit for me, they thought, because they didn't think I was cut out to play Shakespeare, but they did think I might have a chance off Broadway. So they encouraged me to go to New York and I thought, okay, I'll go to New York. That sounds great. And that's when I first left home at the age of 19 to go study acting in New York at the HB studio.
What was that like?
Fabulous. It was just so great. I mean, the way I found my first little apartment there, I mean, I don't get into that much detail about that in the book. I mean, I could write a whole book about my adventure in New York, and I was only there for about a year, but it was incredible. It was just felt like anything was possible. I was in the Big Apple, you know, living in this funky little apartment with this other girl that was an aspiring actress, and going to all these great classes down in Soho. That's where the studio was in the West Village.
Wow.
It was the time when, you know, Andy Warhol and his factory mates were like strolling the streets, and it was just like New York in like 1971. Like, what a time to be there.
What a trip. And you're there. I also love in this book the way your husbands, there were two husbands before you met the love of your life, your soulmate, which is honestly, for anyone out there who's a romantic, you will just swoon as you hear about that. That comes later. But I love the way you kept items of clothing, even though who keeps their wedding gown from a first marriage? But you did, your romantic wedding gown, which represented that romantic time with the hooded, instead of a veil,
I had a jacket with a hood on it that I wore to the temple for the ceremony. And then I whipped off the little jacket and there was this gorgeous like gown underneath with spaghetti straps. It was made of a white jersey. I mean, this was the 70s, so kind of Halston inspired. Mm. But I had designed this wedding gown and with the help of Mrs. Olson, my mother's dressmaker, she sewed it up for me. And it was this beautiful white jersey fabric, you know, lined with white satin. I had been inspired by Margaret Sinclair, who was married Trudeau just a few years earlier.
Yes.
And instead of wearing a veil, she had a hood. And I thought, oh, I love that idea of the hood. That's very romantic. It seemed like, you know, from another era or something. It was like fairy tale. Like, I just loved it. So I ripped that idea off me, and I marched down the aisle with this gorgeous wedding gown. And so, of course, how could I ever throw that gown out? And it wasn't like I hated my first husband and we had a really bad relationship, so I like didn't want to see that dress ever again. I mean, the relationship kind of ran its course. It was time we had grown apart. It was time to move on. I still have, you know, very fond memories of him. He was a wonderful, wonderful person. And this wedding gown, you know, it was just so precious. It just became, you know, I don't know. I guess I kind of see these pieces in my wardrobe the way some people might think pieces of art that they collect.
Yeah.
I don't get to display them in the way that, you know, we display our pieces of art, but just to know that they still live in my closet and they're just so rife with memories and so emblematic of times when I felt a certain way about myself or I wanted to express certain things to the world. Yes. I don't know. I think you can learn so much from the garments that you stash away and We want to put stuff out there, and it's very healthy to recycle stuff and put it, you know, let other people enjoy it and get rid of, don't hoard everything. But certain things, Judy, yeah. I've often regretted giving stuff away. I've never regretted holding on to anything.
Yeah. And, it's true, eh? Yeah, it's true. Yeah. And by the way, you have to get this book, Heart on My Sleeve, just to see this picture of Jeannie with the long flowing hair and the three friezes in your hair. And you said you felt picture perfect. You felt so beautiful on that day. Like, what a great feeling to have that memory.
Yeah, it was definitely a time of innocence. So, I mean, a time of innocence in terms of the era that we were living. You know, this was 1975. Yes. The 70s, very idealistic era, really. And for me, it was, I was moving to Newfoundland the next day. That's what we were, we got wow. married because my boyfriend, who ended up being my husband, he had a fellowship to do postgraduate work in folklore at Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland. So, you know, he asked me to go to Newfoundland with them. And I was like, well, I mean, I was a mime artist at the time. I thought, what is a mime artist going to do in Newfoundland? I didn't even I must have hinted like, well, if you marry me, I'll go to Newfoundland. I was like, okay, let's get married. So we had a big splashy wedding at the Sheraton Center in Toronto. And the next day we boarded a plane for St. John's.
Oh my God. So what I also love about keeping something like that beautiful romantic wedding gown is that it was resurrected by your daughter.
We're going to find out how it was resurrected by your daughter, Joey O'Neill, when we come back from this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. And this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, Jeannie, I was telling everyone how your romantic wedding gown from your first marriage, it was resurrected by Joey O'Neill. First, tell us how and in which way it was resurrected and what she used it for.
Yeah, Joey is just such a creative girl. Wow. And she does her own videos. And she was doing a video for a song that she wrote called Mirroring, which is about seeing glimpses of other people in your own mirror image. You know, how, wow. you know, you look in the mirror, you see a past mirror sometimes. I certainly do all the time. I see my mother.
Yes.
or I
yes.
see my sister. And so she wrote this really poignant song called Mirroring, very moody song. This is on her recent album, Phantom Vibes. And for the video, she wanted to do something very romantic. And she got to shoot at Casa Loma. Wow. And she also shot part of it at the Old Mill. And she wanted to wear something very special. And she asked if she could wear that wedding gown. And I thought, what could...
Oh, my God.
Anyway, and she looked so great in it. She looked like a mini me, except she had short hair at the time. And I had long hair when I wore that gown. But to see her resurrected, you know, it fit her perfectly. That was really special, really a beautiful touch, very meaningful moment for me to see her.
I love that.
On that gown.
I love that. Well, you're in for a real treat because we're actually going to hear Joey O'Neill's song Mirroring from her latest album, Phantom Vibes. Let's all have a listen to Mirroring.
God of God.
Due to international copyright law, podcasts are unable to include music. Music can only be played on the live radio broadcast. Finding Your Bliss airs every Saturday at 1 p.m. If you'd like to hear this artist's music, you can find the link to our Finding Your Bliss SoundCloud in the episode description.
Wow, that was so gorgeous. That was everybody. That was Joey O'Neill. That's Jeannie's daughter singing that gorgeous song, Mirroring, from her latest album. And that was incredible. And she's been on the show before. She's been a beautiful, beautiful artist. There's another artist as well. And I just learned this. So again, when you get the book Heart on My Sleeve, at the beginning of every chapter, there's a gorgeous illustration. And those were all done by Jeannie's other daughter, Becky O'Neill. And they're beautiful. And I just revisited them because I, you know, subconsciously you see them as you're reading the book and they're so adorable. But they were all done by your other daughter. Oh,
yes,
my God.
And I think they really set the tone for the stories, because in your mind's eye, you know, you want to see what's this garment like that she's going to be talking about, or what's this piece of jewelry like or accessory like. So that was great. I do have some colored photographs in the book of some of these pieces, of course, and me wearing them, but not all. Some have been lost, you know, forever. So it was wonderful working with Becky on that. Oh. She came up with some gorgeous illustrations.
I love that you're all in it, like your daughters and you, like it's your book and they're such a big part of it. And that's so incredible. And I even thought it was incredible that your second marriage to Danny O'Neill, who of course is known as Bob McGee, the radio host, and you say even though that marriage only lasted for 12 years, it helped you produce your two gorgeous girls. And also you're forever the optimist, Jeannie, like you're forever the glasses half full person. You say, I had many exhilarating and happy adventures together and you weren't bitter about it. And I'm sure the ending, listen, the end of a marriage is never a good thing, but you were able to look at all the happiness that you had, and you even held on and hung on to your royal blue wedding ensemble and kept it safe in your closet as a constant reminder of the power and confidence that you had when you exchanged your vows this time. Because now this was no longer the innocent, young, romantic Juliet bride.
This was a totally different era, right? Denny and I got married in 1986. And, you know, the 86, like from 75, first marriage, to 86, whoa.
Wow.
That was like,
wow.
I had a full-fledged, fabulous media career going.
Yes.
You know, I was empowered. I was like making money. We had just bought our first house. I mean, you know, it was just a whole other ballgame.
Yes.
So for the occasion, I mean, I wore this smart little 40s inspired Carol Little suit, just a royal blue, very, you know, striking color with, you know, big shoulder pads and nipped in the waist. And, you know, I meant business in that suit.
Yes.
And of course, so we got married at a judge's office. It wasn't, you know, we went away to Switzerland on a great ski holiday the next day. That was pretty exotic. But, you know, it was a much different feel than the first go round, that's for sure.
I love it. I actually think I have a picture. You're not going to believe this. And I should have had it ready today in the first edition of my Toronto Wedding Handbook of you in that outfit. I'm going to find it and I'm going to send it to you in the Toronto Wedding. I had all these celebrities featured in the book and you were one of them. You and Melody Thomas Scott from The Young and the Restless and all of these. Mickey Moore. Oh, my God. You've always believed, Jeannie, in happy endings. And so I have to tell you all, another reason to get this book is just to hear this romantic story, this inspiring story about how you met the love of your life, Ian, who your mother would have been so happy about. And I do believe in Besharet, which means meant to be, because I know that my late grandma Lily, who my Lily was named after, I believe that she brought my husband Cliff to me. I think that your mother brought Ian to you.
No question.
Right?
She had passed 2 weeks before I met him. And she was only hanging on. She was suffering from Parkinson's and she wasn't in great shape the last few months of her life. But she would always say to me, can't you find a partner? Can't you find another husband? You know, I don't want you to be alone. She always thought the worst thing was to be alone. And I said, Ma, you know, it's not that easy. Okay. And I just got to a point where, you know, I thought, listen, I've just got a great life and I'm not going to be stressed out because I can't meet the right person. I'm just going to enjoy myself no matter what. And then my mom just, you know, had to let go. She finally succumbed because she used to say, the only reason I'm hanging on because I don't want to leave you alone. Anyway, she passed. And 2 weeks later, Ian literally walked into my life. He walked up to me at a fabulous gala, the Moonlight Gala at the McMichael Gallery. In Kleinberg, Ontario. And that was one of my mom's favorite places. We always used to attend the McMichael Gallery on a Sunday afternoon for a draw.
Ugh.
And, you know, and all of a sudden there's this guy, this cute and guy with this, you know, thick shock of of gray hair, like a silver fox with a little, you know, goatee, dressed in a really sharp gray suit, and, you know, just made a beeline and, you know, walked right up to me. And I was like, sitting there feeling like a loser because I didn't have a date and why was I having to be there by myself? And all of a sudden he just started engaging me. And you have to read about it in the book.
It's fabulous.
Without question, love at first sight. And every morning we wake up and tell each other how lucky we are and what a miracle it was that we found each other. Because he wasn't from Toronto. He was living in London, or actually outside of London, Ontario, little beach town, Port Stanley at the time. But, you know, he hadn't ever lived in Toronto. I never would have met him if it hadn't been for this serendipitous meeting. And I was really not wanting to go to this thing. Wasn't really either. He was in coming out of something as well. So it was a funny time, but somehow the stars aligned and the angels conspired and we found each other.
I love it. I'm so happy for you about this. I am so, so happy for you. And then the wonderful relatives that you inherited, the aunt and uncle in Scotland. And oh, guys, so there's a beautiful Aunt Angela, Ian's aunt, who's now, of course, Jeannie's aunt as well. And there's Aunt Angela's Odie's, a great recipe you've got. Are they delicious, those Odie's?
Oh, yeah, they're delicious. And they're really great with cheddar cheese. Like subtly sweet Scottish Odie's, but just very subtly sweet. And I bake them as therapy almost. You know, there's got to be a batch of Aunt Angela's Odie's. And they are always, because Aunt Angela does this and showed me how to do this, they are cut with a heart-shaped cookie cutter. So that's why they suited the book as well, right? Yeah. You know, that whole idea of heart, heart on my sleeve, you know, heart in the oven.
And I don't want to give it all away, but she was also a fashionista and they took you to this wonderful design house and there's something that you got there. I don't know if I should say it, if you want to say it or leave it for the reader, but it's a serious, serious item. Like, it's not like you said, boyfriends in the past might buy you lingerie or a pretty accessory or a little trinket or something, but this was a substantial.
Yeah, it was the first major garment that any guy ever bought me. And it's just a
beautiful, beautiful story. Even an ex-boyfriend earlier on in the book got you this beautiful glyph, a gleaming silver cuff from Tiffany.
Oh.
And it empowered you. So it's just funny, like even pieces that are in your jewelry box or in your wardrobe that, you know, that give you empowerment, that give you courage.
Judy, everyone's got these things. I mean, we all have collections of clothing. You know, some of us, you know, spend more time maybe freaking out about these pieces or thinking about them or worrying about what they're going to wear. But, you know, everyone's got some collection, unless you're living in a nudist colony. some wardrobe. And that's what I hope the book does. I hope it inspires people to go into their own wardrobes and see what they've got there and try to have those memories come rushing back. Or even if these pieces don't exist anymore, you may just have a picture of yourself, you know, at your junior prom wearing this fabulous dress that your mom bought you. And what kind of memories does that really inspire? I think these pieces tell us so much about who we were at certain times in our lives and what we wanted to tell the world about ourselves.
Absolutely. I love even the story about your Sweet 16 dress, and you saw it on the cover, the December cover of Harper's Bazaar in 1967, at that turquoise sparkly Sweet 16. It's just the best story.
Mrs. Olson, the dressmaker, we knocked off a dress that was featured on the cover of Harper's Bazaar, a fabulous turquoise sparkly outfit. That was a great, why did my mother throw that one? That's one thing I really wish.
We have to recreate it. I've got a picture
of myself in it. And that's in the book. So that's good.
Aside from all of these celebrities and designers who loved you and got you gifts. And oh my God, there's so many stories that I don't even know. The red boots.
Alexander McQueen boots.
My God, that story. Or David Dunkley, the Canadian milliner, bringing you a hat when you were diagnosed with cancer. And that helped you so much. You rocked it. Like, that's number one. You rocked that hat. How did that hat and the gesture and all of it help you through those difficult days?
Don't answer that just yet. We're going to find out more about how that wonderful gesture helped you during that time when we come back after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. And just before the break, Jeannie, I was asking you about that wonderful gift of a hat that you got from Canadian designer David Dunkley. How did it help you during that difficult time?
Well, first of all, you know, I know it seems so trivial, of course, to be worrying in a way about hair loss at a time when you're going through cancer and breast cancer. You should really get your priorities straight. And certainly, you know, it wasn't a priority that I was losing my hair, but it was a good distraction because better to focus on something that, you know, I'm going to lose my hair. It will grow back. I will look my best for, you know, the next few months as I'm going through chemotherapy. But, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't really want to wear a wig. I just didn't feel that was an authentic thing for me to do. And all of a sudden, this incredible package arrived at my house with a hat in it that was created by David Dunkley, great Toronto milliner. But beyond the fact that he had sent me a hat, what a gorgeous gift, it was a little black newsboy cap that my mother's loved that style of cap. She always used to talk about a cashket. That's what they used to call it, I guess, in the old country, a cashket. And it was also like the kind of little newsboy cap that the little Hasidic boys used to wear her little shtetl when she was growing up. And she always wore hat, and she had a few hats of that style herself. Wow. Because she was very short, and she said if she wore something with a big brim, she'd look like a mushroom. But she always had two hats. And all of a sudden, this hat, it was my mother's favorite style of hat, arrived for me. And I put it on, and I thought, yeah, this is a hat I can wear. This will cover up the gray, because I can't, you know, dye my hair now that I'm going chemo. And it'll cover up all those bald spots on my that I'm starting to get on my scalp. And I wore that little hat, and then my other dear, dear friend, Louise Kennedy, brilliant Irish designer, sent me one, a cap like that in magenta. One. I couldn't believe she had it in her luxury collection. And she, this was even before she found out that, you know, I had already gotten a cap of that nature. So those caps became my signature look in a way for the duration of my treatments and just helped elevate me. I mean, it's incredible. The transformational power that clothing and garments and accessories have.
So true.
That's what I love about fashion. It's transformational powers.
It's so true. And I'm not going to get to you because you have to read the book, but you have to read the story about what Beyonce taught Jeannie and the meeting with Paul McCartney. There's so many. It's unbelievable, unbelievable. Coming up, Jeannie, you are co-curating an incredible exhibition with Paul Hardy called Obsession, The Unscripted Life of Jeannie Becker. Oh my God. Yeah. I want to come to this. It's set to reopen at the J.R. Shaw Center for Arts and Culture in 2026. And through your gifted skill set of writing, storytelling, charismatic nature, you've created new ways of making fashion and high couture accessible for everyone. Can you tell us more about this exciting new venture?
This is an exciting. The Glenbow Museum, which is located in downtown Calgary, is currently undergoing a $200 million renovation. And when they reopen in June of 2026, one of the big major shows, probably the biggest show that they'll have at the time, they'll have a few different shows on, but this one's major, is going to be a retrospective of my career and my life. And the brilliant designer, Calgary-based designer, Paul Hardy, is co-curating it with me. And there's going to be some incredible stuff in there because I'm a pack rat and I've held on to everything. So yes, You'll see a lot of these clothes, a fabulous designer creations, lots of video, of course, from all the great archives of fashion television and the new music. Mm. And we've got things in there like the first TV that my dad bought in 1953. That's where I saw Elvis Presley. That's where I saw the Beatles. That's what I grew up with. I was keeping that in my basement. The trunk that my parents emigrated to Canada with, which is currently on display at Pier 21 in Halifax.
Wow.
We're going to borrow it again because we had donated. Oh. And that will be in the show. You know, my little ballet costume from when I was 5 years old. A film of me doing mime from 1974 when I returned from Paris.
Paris.
Gorgeous 10-minute film that was produced called Portrait of a Mime. And doing my thing.
That's so thrilling.
Very much, but yeah. Anyway,
that's so thrilling. I love that. I love that. There's so much in this book, everyone. You know, the other thing that we can't get into it in an intense way, but I love the story about how you were gifted that maternity, or you wore a dress by Chanel and they gave it to you. The designer gave it to you. You felt so good about you, and you felt so good about it and good about yourself. And everyone you encountered that day looked at you with awe and treated you with such admiration and in such a favorable way. And that was juxtaposed later in the book by the punk rock guy, the punk rock musician.
What,
I know, but what a great story. Because you first saw him in the skin tight jeans and now you were seeing him in the Friday. Yeah, what a great story. But it just shows you that dressing the part and how the clothes you wear really do affect how people perceive you. Like, can you just say a few words about that? Because it's so true.
Well, I think, you know, that's what we're taught. That's what at the heart of this and at the heart of the book, that these clothes not only tell us a lot about who we are, but certainly tell the outside world so much about who, you know, what wardrobe choices we made and why and how are we feeling at the time and why we dressed a certain way. And, you know, I just think costume and clothing is just such a great form of communication. And I guess that's one of the main reasons that I got into fashion. You know, yeah, it was a love of clothing and a love of style and all that. But at the very heart of it, it's a love of communication.
Yes.
And a love of trying to understand people and having people be able to express themselves. That's what I love that fashion arena so much.
There's so much in this book. And it's also so readable. It's so readable and juicy and good and interesting. And just, it's heart swelling. This is a word that Jeannie loves, but it is. It's heart swelling. That's what I felt when I read it. Jeannie, you always live life to the fullest with a sunny and optimistic disposition, with grace and grit, as I've said. I know a lot of this comes from your parents. You said that you owe so much to them to live out your dreams. How have you done that? And how are you doing that every day? Because you really have the secret, I think, on how to do that. You do.
I don't know if it's a secret. I think it's just being conscious of every moment and how precious life is. And certainly my cancer journey really, really taught me so much about appreciating the moment. And knowing that everything is temporary, and we don't want to let fear and negativity rob us of all of life's good things. Yeah. So, you know, I feel, it's my duty to carry on in the best way I possibly can. And that's, I just try to do my best every day. Some days might not work out that well, but always
Amazing.
Just try to live in the light. You got to live in the light.
You are the light. You are the light. And I just want to ask you, what is the biggest lesson that you'd like to impart to the readers? What you've learned from your clothes and from all of this?
Just to be yourself. Be yourself. Don't aspire to be anybody else. And I think that's another great thing that we love about fashion. It allows us to be original.
Express who you are. Absolutely. So, you know, I always ask this question at the end of every show. So, of course, I'm going to ask it to you again. What is bliss these days for Jeannie Becker?
Bliss these days is really sitting back and understanding why I work as hard as I worked my whole life, because I'm realizing that I have managed to touch people, and that's really the biggest blessing of all. So I guess that's bliss for me. I'm living at a very wonderful moment right around now with all the positive feedback that I'm getting from this book and from all the, you know, the celebration of my career via this upcoming museum exhibit. It just feels really good to have all these people coming up to me, telling me that they grew up with me on TV, and I meant something to them.
You know,
better than that.
You mean something to all of us, and we love you. And I want to thank you for this beautiful hour with you. Really, it's been such an honor to be with you.
So much love for you, Judy. So much love. Thank you so much.
To you too. What is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and of course, to get a beautiful copy of your book, Heart on My Sleeve, Stories from a Life Well Worn?
What's the best way for people to contact me?
Yes, to connect with you.
I'm big on Instagram. It's at The Jeannie Becker, spelled JeanieBecker, The Jeannie Becker. My website, JeanieBecker.com. You know, just, yeah.
The book is everywhere.
You'll find me. Yeah, the book certainly is everywhere. So look out for it.
Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Jeannie Becker, who is living their bliss, who really is bliss, actually. So if you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, mindfulness expert, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters on the show, like we just featured the wonderful Joey O'Neill. And so if you are one, reach out to us at fyv@findingyourbliss.com. And for those of you who don't know, I'm the Bliss Coach. So if you're feeling stuck and you need some help to gain clarity or connect with your passion and purpose, reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. And of course, you can find us Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app, and at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook.
In Bliss News, we're so excited to announce our phenomenal giveaway of Jeannie Becker's new book, Heart on My Sleeve, Stories from a Life Well Worn, courtesy of Jeannie Becker and Simon & Schuster Publishing. All you have to do to get in on this giveaway is just go to my Instagram page, at The Bliss Minute. Like the post, tag two friends, and follow all the contest details. I'm so excited for a lucky listener to win a copy of this wonderful book. The contest closes this Tuesday, October 29th at 6 p.m. I would love to thank our wonderful guest, Jeannie Becker, for being back on the show today. Thank you. We loved having you as always. And a special thanks as well to Joey O'Neill for sharing her beautiful music with us. Also thanks to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, Associate Producer Eva Shabbatai, Associate Producer Olivia Vigiani, Audio Engineer Juliana Yanisiello, Senior Editor Lauren Kaminsky, Video Editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, Audio Producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.